Well, hello and welcome to the Cisco Chat Podcast. My name is Rob Boyd. I am normally the host of Cisco's TechWise TV. Actually, I still am. But today, I get to be the guest moderator for a special podcast episode with Cisco Chat. And joining us today is Naveen Menon, who's president of Cisco for Southeast Asia. And we're getting together because we're talking about this new agreement between Cisco and Interpol. And Naveen's here to share more details on this exciting collaboration between two big organizations. We're doing a lot for security. Naveen, I'm so excited to get to do this with you. How are you doing?
Very good, Rob. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
Well, it's a pleasure because I actually am kind of a guest moderator, so you're a guest on a guest, and we're just going to pull this off together. But this is a big deal. So we have a big announcement, and we're going to get into these details. It's between Cisco and Interpol. Let's just start right there. Just in case there's someone who doesn't – I'm going to assume our audience knows Cisco, but let's start with just Interpol. How would you describe what Interpol is and why this is important to understand?
Yeah, well, the easiest way, I guess, to think about Interpol, it's an international organization. It is an organization that is responsible for coordinating and collaborating for police forces around the world. And there are, in fact, 192 such police forces around the world that are part of Interpol. So it's a wonderful organization that is crosses boundaries and borders and coordinates all the police forces around the world.
Interesting. Okay. So, and obviously this is about the fact that crime certainly does not stay within any certain geographical borders, and technology certainly knows no borders. Let's understand this announcement. What have Cisco and Interpol agreed to here? What, do you mind describing that?
Yeah. So what Cisco and Interpol have done is we have agreed to collaborate together on data exchange. So what that means is we will be sharing threat intelligence data and threat intelligence information with Interpol and vice versa. Now, this agreement was signed in Singapore, actually, by John Stewart, who is Cisco's chief security and trust officer, and Nakatani Sun, who is the executive director for Interpol's Global Complex for Innovation, which is actually headquartered here in Singapore. The purpose of the agreement was to collaborate and to get the two organizations working together to have a more coordinated and focused approach towards sharing threat intelligence. And it's important to call out, Rob, that this collaboration will actually help police better identify cyber criminals and cyber crime. And Cisco will provide relevant information requested by Interpol that can assist in their investigations. So it's an exciting opportunity for Cisco to be part of something that is gaining prominence in the world right now as we start to see cybercrime on the rise. And frankly, this is just the start of where we think it's going to go. It's also important to notice that to note that Cisco will not be sharing customer information with Interpol. That's of course something that's found.
That's not what we agreed to, right? Exactly. It's usually, well, and quite frankly, we don't usually, and it's not about the data we look at from a threat standpoint. Obviously, it doesn't even include identifiable data. It is really about the metadata. And I, just personally speaking, with my own background, understanding, and security, this is huge, in my opinion, just because one of the things that I think really holds back advancement from a security perspective is a lack of sharing, is the fact that, one, there's not always a good way to share. It's very difficult for organizations to, at any level, much less countries and across international boundaries, to reveal information that could potentially be very helpful for their counterparts, but even for themselves. So I think this is a big deal because it starts to lay out these kind of frameworks that become extremely important for us to be able to really move the needle in terms of what we can each uniquely bring to the equation. So with that in mind, when we talk about an agreement between us and Interpol, what is it? Let's go into each side of it here. How can Cisco actually help Interpol? What is it that Cisco is bringing to the agreement that they would say, yeah, we need to work with someone like a Cisco?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're all aware of physical crime. So we know that physical crime, for if you steal something from a shop or if there is a murder or an investigation, that typically most crime tends to be very local or has been historically very local. When you look at cybercrime actually originates from an international context. So you will typically have criminals that sit in one part of the world who are using servers in other parts of the world and who are infecting or compromising information in a third part of the world. So that usually crosses boundaries. So what Cisco does is, I mean, because of our the work in our global footprint, we are very well placed to observe and assess all these trends in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. We're also able to measure the window of time between a compromise and the detection of a threat in time to detection. We block around 20 billion threats a day through our collective security intelligence, which is enabled by Talos, which is our research group. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this information is information that essentially the organizations like Interpol do not have. And the police force that work within the Interpol framework, the 192 police forces worldwide, don't have either. So we'll be providing some tremendous threat intelligence information that is very differentiated compared to what the police forces around the world currently have. And so that's something they're very excited about.
And this is something, so Cisco plays in the security space at quite a deep level and a lot of, and it's advanced. Boy, has it really taken off in the last, I don't know, 10 years plus since I've been looking at it deeply within Cisco. And it really is, it's less about products or technologies and really is about intelligence gathering and then analysis from the humans to the algorithms to everything else. And so Cisco spends a lot of time on this. Interpol spends a lot of time and such on this, as I understand, and we're all going to have different angles on it. And so that's interesting to see this come together. I think that's going to work. Well, let me ask you this, and I don't know if it's just because it's in your backyard, but why Singapore? Why was Singapore singled out as the place for this agreement to take place?
Well, it's interesting you raise that because many people might be wondering that, and you think, you know, when you think of cybersecurity, you think of the West Coast of the U.S. as a center for innovation, or you think of Israel. Actually, Singapore, in that sense, is very much at the forefront of cybersecurity research and innovation, and over the years, Singapore has transformed itself from being essentially a fishing village into what it is now, a very high tech, digitally enabled city center. The amount of effort put into safety and security, and I think many of you were, you know, who are listening would know that Singapore is a very safe place. I mean, you know, you have very, very low levels of crime, probably some of the lowest in the world worldwide. And so in that sense, it's a natural extension to extend that physical security into the online domain. So Singapore is very much at the forefront of fighting cybercrime, and Interpol itself has set up, as a result of Singapore's infrastructure, has set up a global complex for innovation headquartered in Singapore. So their global cybercrime center is actually based here. So it was an interesting opportunity for us because we are based here as a company. Our Asia Pacific headquarters is here in Singapore. Interpol's innovation center is here in Singapore. We had a conversation with each other on how we can co-create and co-innovate together at the highest levels. And that chemistry just hit off. It was very, you know, it was very interesting because we got on very well with the leadership of Interpol, and we immediately came to the conclusion that we can work very effectively together. And then what we did is we brought in many members of our team globally from the Security and Trust Organization, from our various teams within Cisco. And Interpol did the same, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, an agreement in place. And it literally took us about 4 or 5 months to put this agreement together. And there was some tremendous work done from our side, from our policy team, and our communications team, our legal team, to sort of help craft this. And it was done in a super fast way because the chemistry was so good.
Well, and one of the things that jumps out at me too on the, as I was looking through the press release, obviously, we get together, we want to toot our own horn and this type of thing from a Cisco perspective, but to be straight about it, this is not, Interpol doesn't only work with Cisco, work with a number of other companies. We don't need to go through who they are, but I just want to make the point that this is about and sharing threat intelligence, which isn't about a personal economic incentive. What's the right way to put that? This is really about something that we all need to contribute to and benefit from, but sometimes it's difficult to do. And as you mentioned, gosh, 5 months to hammer out whatever those details, I probably don't even want to know what kind of stuff we have to do to make sure this stuff is done intelligently, that there's a level what's the right word? When you think about how you codify data so that it can be measured and trends and things like this, well, we have to speak the same language, so to speak, from a data
Absolutely.
Perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, we all come to work with a list of things to do, et cetera, and we have, you know, relationships at work, and we have essentially an ecosystem around work. And Cisco, and I've noticed from our company, we are a great place to work. You know, we're a really fun place to work. We do some really cutting edge work and technology that is globally relevant. I noticed there's a lot, you know, there's probably, you know, a large group of individuals within the Cisco ecosystem that want to do more than just provide economic benefits to Cisco. There are a lot of people in this organization who want to bring meaning to the company and meaning to their lives and meaning to lives around that they impact as well. Now, if we can do that through these kinds of agreements, and that, for example, in this case, we'll be sharing intelligence to help bring cyber crime and progress the agenda on cybercrime and bring criminals to justice, that's a very impressive reason for existence as a company. Secondly, this agreement is just a starting point for us to build a deeper relationship with Interpol. So, for example, we're already in conversations with taking some of our training and our material around cybersecurity, which we have deployed worldwide in schools and higher education, into the police force so that we can help the police forces around the world learn how to ask the right questions, use the right technology, and bring that, you know, mean time to detection down from currently what it is, 39 hours, you know, from the time a breach is instigated to the time it is contained, down to what we, you know, essentially is 3.5 hours. And I would hope that in the sort of year or few years to come, that we could bring that down to a matter of minutes or even seconds, right, through our technology, so that it makes the life of the policeman a lot easier to live, and also brings safety and security to people all around us as well.
Well, it's interesting how, you know, we've on TechWise TV even, we've covered things from when you get down to an individual device level of router forensics, or how, you know, what kind of fingerprints, so to speak, from a digital perspective can be gleaned from different things. And now with the speed of data and the speed of change and such that we're all grappling with from a security perspective, I love what you're saying there in terms of the time to detection, because that assumes that there is a level of detection, which in some cases is a big assumption, because you got to see something is happening to be able to even react to it. And what we've seen, especially since all these are naturally international and they cross borders, these kind of threats, enforcement organizations at this level with Interpol deal with, I think can really help with the fact that, you know, what your evidence recovery and your ability to demand data or be able to track back and do things can be really hampered by countries that don't share information or don't have the ability to uncover stuff because international law starts getting into effect in different country laws. Interpol deals with this stuff on a regular basis. I just see a lot of benefits between for our customers, for just the community at large, when we can start to share this information and figure out how do we get past these things, because it's a reality that's just not going away.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's not just, the impact of threat of the threats are really significant. So let's forget about, you know, brand equity and all of that, which obviously is hurt, but also employee sentiment, customers are also going to be turned off or governments will be put at, you know, exposed if there's no cyber secure kind of environments in place. But let's just look at the numbers, right? So we worked with A.T. Kearney, who was a consulting firm who's been supporting us on assessing the value at risk in Southeast Asia. So this is just, Rob, the 10 countries in Southeast Asia.
Okay.
So the consulting firm, which is independent from Cisco, looked at the top-ranked companies by sector, looked at the cost per cyber attack by sector, the likelihood of a breach, and then the expected number of cyber attacks per year between now and 2025. And the value at risk that was estimated was in the range of almost $400 billion, U.S. dollars. So that's almost $500 trillion just in the 10 countries. So if you are actually a company or a government in this region and you are, exposed, then there's a significant financial impact to your business or your government. Now, Southeast Asia, for those that don't know, is actually sort of a microcosm of the world. And, you know, on one hand, you have countries like Singapore that ranks number one in network readiness. And then you have countries like Myanmar that are ranked 133. You have mobile penetration in Singapore around 145%, and countries like Laos that have only 30% of mobile penetration. So you see a very broad sort of diversity in the digital indicator, which sort of reflects the world in a way. And if you can take this value at risk assessment and you can apply it globally, because there will be countries that are more advanced and countries that are less. And that number is literally, you know, will be staggering. These are just the 10 countries in Southeast Asia. We're talking about almost half a trillion U.S. dollars of impact.
Wow. Well, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but I get the sense, and as I understand, you're passionate about security. You've been evangelizing the need for better security, digital security, for quite some time. And certainly education is being a foundation for any developing country, especially the ones, of course, that you're responsible for there. But my feeling is sometimes, you know, we at least I think, this is my view of the world living here in Texas, you know, that we go, oh, well, America's got this all figured out, or Europe, or certain parts, we got this stuff. But I think we deal with infrastructure to a certain extent that keeps us more antiquated sometimes than we realize. And I feel like that countries that have historically been considered not technologically advanced can suddenly just cross that chasm, so to speak, at such an accelerated rate, one, for the benefit of their country, but also potentially putting themselves at risk faster than ever possible, because they skip the whole middle ground of older technology that deployed before. Are you seeing that happen? Are you seeing that kind of growth and acceleration happening in countries that we may have thought weren't that advanced?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we call it this concept of leapfrogging. I mean, there is this concept of leapfrogging that exists in Southeast Asia. So you have, you know, certain countries that are sort of not as economically advanced as others, but are spending a lot on digital and on digital in the digital economy, and as a result are accessing these technologies in a much faster way. But I have to say, Rob, there, you know, that exists because the technology exists and it's become affordable. But when you talk about education, it's such an important part of, you know, when you put in place technology, the education of the citizens needs to be in place as well. So one of the things, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that we need to do, especially in Southeast Asia, and I think this is a global issue, frankly, in the U.S. as well as in Europe and in Asia, is that we need to strengthen education systems to enable kids of today to sort of be able to make the right choices. So, for example, bringing in cybersecurity into the national core curriculum for students is something that is definitely should be considered in many countries around the world, and is currently being considered. So, and then bringing that into the curriculum for the polytechnics. So the kids who don't go to university but go to a trades profession, which in Singapore, for example, you have institutes of higher learning. These are more sort of practical ways in which you can bring people into the workforce with skills that don't exist right now. We've also seen in some countries, particularly I think in Israel and Singapore, we've seen national military service programs where, you know, you typically have air, land, and sea when you do national service, but you now also have a cyber stream. So if you are a very, very high qualified and, you know, exceptionally talented hacker, you could spend 2 years serving your country in the cyber national service program, as opposed to, going out into the Army, Navy, or anything like that. And I think that, you know, when you look at girls in these sectors, this is an opportunity for men and women to kind of go into serving their country. And then finally, when you look at, you know, people who are really hitting their second or third jobs into their 40s and 50s, and you start looking at, you know, the aging phenomenon as we are all getting older and living longer, people are looking for career transitions around the 40s or around the 50s. And we're finding that the universities and the polytechnics have playing a very important role in educating these workers to transition into new jobs in the cyber industry. So it's a very critical thing to leapfrog. I think it's an important point you made. However, it's also important to change education systems so that we can build capability so that people know how to use these systems and know how to expose vulnerabilities and to help, you know, save your system so that they don't get compromised.
Yeah, it really becomes a circular thing that we need to set up here, right? Because we need the system. We need smarter people. We're all, you know, Cisco included. We're all at a we're always at a shortage of more and more talented people that are growing into these digital natives that understand this stuff at a more intrinsic level. At the same time, and I know she called out old people here, but I'm not going to take offense to that. That the notion that I think there's so many opportunities, and if there's one thing we old guys bring to the equation, hopefully, is context and the ability to understand the historical nature of why things are the way they are and what may have led to them. And I don't know. There's so many different ways. I feel like we could talk about this forever, but I want to make sure, obviously, the agreement between Cisco and Interpol is key here. This is big news. You mentioned it's, we're going to continue building on this into the future, so this is really just the start. Is there anything that I failed to ask you that you wanted to make sure you got across here?
Yeah, I mean, maybe just one sort of final comment about the partnership. I mean, the partnership itself is the starting point. So we, you know, our colleagues over at Interpol and our team here at Cisco have talked about extending this into other areas. We believe there's a lot more we can add. This is the start, and there's a journey. And I think the area where we'd like to explore further is in areas around jointly developing training and developing skills that we can build into the police forces worldwide. Secondly, I think there is an area around innovation itself. So in Singapore, which is turning into a significant force for innovation globally, where we're looking at setting up an innovation center, and this innovation center could actually serve as a center for cybersecurity research, but more from the applied sense. So we could actually embed cybersecurity into the coming wave of Internet of Things, and extending it into sort of blockchain technologies. And you'll see that security as the underlying sort of basis for everything going forward in the digital economy is something that needs innovation and needs new ways of thinking, so that we can secure infrastructure, secure services, so that our citizens and our corporates are, and our small, medium enterprises, schools, et cetera, public sector are all safe. And so there's a lot more to do with Interpol, and this is just a start. I guess that's the main point I'd like to leave you with.
No, that's great. And I know you've made this point before, but I love the fact that you continue to bring this out, which is that as exciting as digitization is, and as exciting as everything gets, is that it will not continue if we cannot do it securely. Everything is built on trust and good security, and this type of sharing that we're exhibiting with this agreement is part of how we continue to build trust and build on things that can continue to accelerate the economy, accelerate careers, and our ability to work better together. So thank you so much. I'm so glad you're running Asia for Cisco, and I'm probably oversimplifying that a little bit there, but I feel like in some small way, perhaps through our partnership here, that you and I are now crime fighters. I don't know if that's going too far. But I feel like a crime fighter because I was part of this announcement. It's thank you so much, Navi. I appreciate your time.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Rob. Yeah, I mean, crime fighter is something, obviously, I'd love to aspire towards being. I can't say I'm there yet, but something, I as a child, obviously, I wanted to be doing something meaningful. And so this is my, one small way that I could do that. And I know many people around the world would relate to that. So those that are interested in getting involved in something like this, please reach out to me or our Southeast Asian team.
Absolutely. And I'll call you afterwards, see if we can get some badges or something. I just want a badge. but listen, okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, guys. This has been the Cisco Chat Podcast. Hey, obviously, if you want to see more of the announcement, it probably is easy to get to, but you can always go to the Cisco Newsroom for more information and the details. Read the announcement directly for yourself between Cisco and Interpol. I also encourage you to check out the Cisco Trust Center at trust.cisco.com. You can learn more about some of the principles and that this comprehensive data protection program that Cisco has put forth. We have a lot of work to do going forward, but it's fun to be able to just stop for a moment and say, all right, hey, we did this, and we can build on this. So thank you, Naveen. Thank you to your team, and thank you guys for listening to the podcast. My name is Rob Boyd. Check back to this podcast for more great information in the future. Appreciate you listening. Y'all take care.